It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at Central Time, we'll talk to a young rapper from Milwaukee who's trying to spread a positive message about creating peace and building community.
First, two Republicans are circulating a new proposal that would prohibit some local governments from issuing photo ID cards. Critics say the bill attacks local control, but supporters say it's necessary to prevent fraud and confusion. Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee are working together to create local photo ID cards geared toward homeless people, undocumented immigrants, runaway teens, and others who might have trouble getting identification.
Joe Sanfilippo joins us now. He's a Republican state representative for the 15th Assembly District and one of the lawmakers sponsoring this proposal. Representative Sanfilippo, welcome back to Central Time.
Great. Thanks for having me again.
Well, a tricky point that confused me at first, and I want to separate out right now, your legislation would do two different things. One thing for counties and towns when it comes to these local IDs, another thing for cities and villages. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. So what the bill does is it says that if a city or a village wants to issue a local ID, it lays groundwork under which that can happen. So some of the critics have been saying that, you know, we're trampling on local control because we're stopping these local IDs from being issued, but that's not true. Under our legislation, a city or a village has the ability to issue an ID. But what we're saying is the county government cannot participate in that program, and we do that for a matter of just stopping redundancy. As you know, county government is just another branch of state government. The state already issues ID cards, and it follows state regulations as well as federal regulations when it does so. So if you let the county participate in this card process that, for example, they want to do here down in the city of Milwaukee, I represent part of West Dallas, which is in Milwaukee County. Well, if the city of Milwaukee wants to issue ID cards, why should my constituents in West Dallas help pick up the tab because the city of Milwaukee was able to talk a few supervisors on the Milwaukee County Board into splitting the tab in order to do that? So what we're saying is the county shouldn't do it because it would be redundant. The state already issues IDs, but if the local municipalities want to do it, the bill lays out a framework on which the local municipalities can do this on their own if they so choose.
And then let's tackle that point. If a city or a village wants to do this independently under this law of a county, what guidelines would this law give them?
So basically what we're saying in the bill is that anything you would need a state-issued ID for when it comes to getting any type of public assistance or for voting or registering to voting, you can't use the local ID for that. You would have to have a state ID. And it's important to point out that this is consistent with what the proponents of the bill want to do. They are saying that they're not issuing these ID cards on a local level for anything other than being able to, you know, get prescriptions and bank accounts and do things locally. But they have refused to say what their intent is in the bill. When opponents have asked them, well, then just put in your bill what your own intent is, they refuse to do that. So there are no laws on the books right now that say whether local ID cards are or are not legal. So what we're doing is introducing these rules now to say to the local government, if you want to put those ID cards out, you can, no problem, but here's the guidelines under which you need to put them in, and here's what the cards can be used for.
And a voter ID has been a big issue in Wisconsin for quite a while. Legislation passed some years ago will actually be in effect for elections this year, it looks like. Was that one of your worries, that these local IDs might create some form of confusion at polling stations?
Well, right. And you know, if the city of Milwaukee issues an ID card, people could be confused and think that they can take that ID card and go to the poll and vote. Well, they can't. So our legislation says that it needs to clearly state on that local ID card that it's not being, you know, not to be used for voting. And again, this is consistent with what the city officials and county officials who want to issue these local cards say that they intend these IDs for. But when they were asked in their public hearings to amend their bill to include that on there, they refused to do it. So we feel that it's incumbent upon us to make sure that there's no confusion. The last thing you want to do is have an eligible voter go to the poll thinking that they can use this local issue ID for voting and being turned away and find out that they can't.
Talking to Representative Joe Sanfilippo about the idea of local governments issuing their own photo IDs. A new bill that he's co-sponsoring would put limits on that, would keep counties from being involved in it, and would create guidelines for cities and villages doing that. This is an issue now. Milwaukee, the city of, and the county of are working together on a plan along these lines. Representative Sanfilippo, we mentioned, of course, that effort in Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee. Supporters, as you mentioned, say, hey, this would help people get things like library cards, prescriptions, maybe bank accounts. These are people in many cases who would have difficulty, they say, getting state IDs, maybe homeless people, maybe undocumented immigrants. These wouldn't let them vote, clearly. So what's wrong with those being issued and with counties being involved in issuing them?
Well, again, I think that where the reason Senator Wangard and I drew the line at the county is, again, county government is a part of state government. The state government already issues ID cards, and it does so under the guise of both state statute and federal regulation. So if the county is going to issue a local ID card that's in addition to the state ID card, it's repetitive and redundant and a waste of taxpayer money. And again, I think this issue is better handled at the municipal level. And I'll just say, as I said before, why should my constituents in the city of West Allis help pay for ID cards that the city of Milwaukee wants to issue? You know, if West Allis thinks that ID cards are important for citizens that live within the city of West Allis, they have every right and ability to issue their own municipal ID cards, but that should be done at the local municipal level and not countywide.
But again, the case being made in that Milwaukee County and Milwaukee City cases, this isn't redundant with state ID. These are people who, in some cases, can't get that ID, and in some cases would find it very difficult to do so. It does different things than the state ID, again, not for state benefits, not for voting. So is it really redundant then?
Well, it's redundant in a way that there's a reason why the people that they want to give these local ID cards to can't get them, and that's because they violated federal law and they're not able to otherwise obtain an ID card legally. So what the local city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County are trying to do is subvert federal regulation and state statutes and issue these what can be confusing ID cards on their own. So again, we don't prevent them from doing that at a local level. But what we're saying is if you're going to subvert federal law, you can't then participate in all of the federally backed programs such as public assistance. And if you're going to subvert state statute, then you can't ignore all of the other requirements when a state-issued ID is required, like voting, for example. And so all we're doing is safeguarding the system from fraud and abuse, but also from confusion.
We'll leave it there for now. We'll watch this one as it progresses. Representative Sanfilippo, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
That was Joe Sanfilippo, Republican state representative for the 15th Assembly District. He was with us to talk about a proposal he's circulating to limit local photo ID cards.
Running Rebels is a community youth organization in Milwaukee founded by Executive Director Victor Barnett. His group provides positive choices for young men in Milwaukee.
He joined us last week from our studios in Milwaukee, along with one young man in the Running Rebels program, his son, Lil Vic Barnett. Lil Vic and others in the program are using music to spread a positive message to youth facing daily pressures of violence, drugs, truancy, and other problems. Victor, welcome to Central Time.
Sure.
And Lil Vic, thanks for coming up to the studio.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, Victor, let's start with you and talk a little bit about Running Rebels. Tell us about the youth you're working with in this mentoring and the after-school programs you have.
Sure. Running Rebels is a youth-serving agency that's been in existence 35 years now. We just celebrated 35 years, so we're very excited. And it's built upon the principles, same principles that it started with, which is forming strong relationship with our young people so that we can help steer them in the right direction so that they can set goals and reach those goals.
And I understand mentoring is a big part of this.
Yes, mentoring is definitely a big part of what we do. We have a strong mentoring program, and mentoring is a component of everything we do, such as a basketball coach might think he's just going to be coaching, but that's not the case because he is a mentor and he is a person that can form that relationship with a young person and be able to help them see things clearer.
And little Vic, let's bring you in this. I know you worked with a mentor there, Day Hill, and you've worked on music together. Talk about him and how you work together.
Yeah, Day is, like, really important to me because, like, when we're up in the studio, he's not just, like, let's say we have to record something in one day. He's not just going to be strict. He's going to have fun with me, and he's always going to make it fun. He's always been a good role model, showing me the good things and the good way to go.
And, Victor, I understand Day is an alum of Running Rebels. He's been through the program and is working not just with Little Vic, but other people as well.
Yeah, Day's been with us probably about 6-7 years now. When he came, he wanted to be involved in the studio and just do his music, but found out that there's a lot more careers and possibilities in regards to entertainment. Now he's probably one of the better studio engineers in the city for his age. He also does graphic design, audio visual, so he's well-rounded and has found out there's a lot of possibilities in the entertainment field.
And Lil Vic, tell us a little bit about how you got started as a rapper.
It all started a couple years ago. We were coming back from an agency trip because every year we take a couple kids that deserve it and we go out of town. And we were coming back on the bus and, like, we were just talking. And we started making up words to go with the alphabet. And that formed a song called the ABC song. And we just came up with different words. And then my sister was like, yeah, you have a really nice rapping voice. I was like, yeah, I want to become a rapper. And that's when, at the Rebels, Day started helping me. And we got in the studio and started recording songs, positive songs.
I understand you have a song that that was written about your grandma. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the song is called Everything's Gonna Be All Right. And we started coming up with ideas when my grandma died of cancer. And it's basically talking about everybody has struggles and everybody has bad things. But we have to keep our head up because in the end, good things will always come out of it.
Victor, is that a part of the message at Running Rebels, dealing with that kind of adversity, whether it's a death in the family or something else, and knowing that everything's going to be all right if you deal with it the right way?
Most definitely. We want our young people that are dealing with so much hopelessness now to understand that adversity is there. All adults go through it, and if you do the right things and you have the right support, everything will be all right. And that's the message that we try to get across through our music at the program.
And Lil Vic, you rap about things like community violence. What kind of message are you trying to get across to people who hear you in the Milwaukee area?
Well, like in my song No More, I'm trying to get the message of the kids that just because you see these things on the news and just because you see them in your neighborhood doesn't mean it's right or cool. You don't have to follow them. You can make your own path and be good.
And Lil Vic, why is it important for you to send that message? I mean, a lot of people are musicians. They sing, they rap, they play an instrument, and, you know, they have fun with it. They sing about whatever. Why was it important to you to have a message in what you're saying?
Because I want Milwaukee to be a better place, because all these rappers, all these famous rappers, I'm pretty sure most of them aren't talking about let's come together, let's be all right. No, they're talking about guns and bad things like that. And my message, I'm hoping to get across, because I would like Milwaukee to be a better place and all.
And speaking of bringing people together, Victor, I know that Lil Vic's music videos, he's done things with other people. A lot of it's a group effort with people who are in Running Rebels, either as youth or as mentors. So it's not just one mentor, one kid. It's a wider effort.
Oh, most definitely. Everything with Running Rebels was born upon the family principles from the music. As you see, we always work together. There's a lot of brainstorming, sitting around talking about things, even with our basketball. I mean, we have a gentleman that's now playing professional ball with the Golden State Warriors, and he had more than one coach. He had a whole bunch of coaches and a whole bunch of mentors. So we really believe in team and the saying of it takes a village to raise a child. It definitely takes us working as a team as we mentor and work with our young people.
Talking to Victor Barnett with the community youth organization Running Rebels in Milwaukee. Also, Victor Barnett Jr., also known as Lil Vic, a rapper himself. And I want to listen now to a little bit. This is a project, a lot of different rappers involved in this one. We'll hear Lil Vic's part of it. This is a song called Be a Bridge. So, Lil Vic, tell us about that. That's you and then a lot of, it's a who's who rapper list in Milwaukee, it seems like. Talk about that song a little bit.
Well, it started off as a movement last year. This year, our movement is 300 strong, and last year it was Be a Bridge. We had people from the north and south side go on this march, and it was a really big event. And the song is basically about we all have to come together, and it's not just about one person. It's about everybody.
And Victor, first I'll say listeners can see the whole video of this. We've got it posted on the Central Time Facebook page. And in that video, there are clips from social justice leaders of the past, Martin Luther King Jr. In Milwaukee, Vel Phillips, current movements. I think the rally Lil Vic was just talking about. Can you talk, Victor, about the significance of tying together what you're doing there today with the history of these movements?
Yeah, I think it's important to make sure that we honor the work that was done in the past and connect that to what's going on now and the work that Vel Phillips and Mr. Grappi did. I think it really is important that we get our young people to understand the history and the struggles and the fights that went on. So then now as we fight some of these similar fights, I think we can connect the two and be able to be more effective in the struggles that we're trying to do.
Lil Vic, tell us some more about some of your other music. I think you've got a full-length album and other videos. What kind of things do you talk about in those?
Like I stated earlier, it's about positivity, everybody coming together and keeping your head up, and how the violence is affecting everybody, not only me, not only the people in our city, but people from everywhere.
And Victor, if there are young people out there or parents maybe in the Milwaukee area saying, hey, I want to get involved with Running Rebels as a youth or as a mentor, how can they get involved?
Well, the easiest way is to give us a call at 414-264-8222. RunningRebels.org is the website. But another big thing that I think we need to do as adults is support our young people. So as I'm trying to convince young people and young adults to do positive music, I think it is so important that we show them that support. So when young people are really big upon views and how many people are watching their videos and things, I think it's important that people go watch these videos. If Lil Vic is making an effort to sell his CD project that has nothing but positive music, I think it's very beneficial when he tell and talk to others and let them know that he's able to have his own little business selling his CD. And then they'll wonder, you mean there's a lot of people that want to hear positive music? I think there are. And we just need to make sure that we as adults are showing that support to our youth as they do positive things.
Victor, a lot of people might, you know, they'll hear the phrase inner city youth and stereotypes or images pop into their heads. What do you wish people outside of Milwaukee knew about the kids there that you work with that we don't know?
I think the biggest thing is that all young people are not terrible and bad. I think the picture is being painted that if one young person do something wrong and 50 young people can do something positive, sometimes we don't even hear about the positive. So, yes, we have some young people that need redirection and that mentoring component, but then there's a lot of young people such as Lil Vic and a lot of the other youth at the Running Rebels organization and other organizations that are doing great things, but we just don't hear about those things enough.
Lil Vic, you're in seventh grade, is that right?
Yeah.
And do you see other, you know, kids in your classes, kids in your school taking on this positive message they want to do, whether it's music or other ways? Are they wanting to pick up the positive message that you're selling?
Yeah, because I go to my school and I tell people about my music. And people often seem interested and they often like my music. And they say, well, it's different and I like it. Because it's positive and it's talking about what we really need to do as a city.
And Victor, what's next for Running Rebels? Are there new things on the horizon? You've mentioned, you know, the basketball, the mentoring, the music. What's next?
Well, I really, as a little kid, my dream was to help change the world. I think right now I have a mission that I'm on to try to help Milwaukee get right. Milwaukee had problems in the past with working together, but right now I'm excited about where we are in regards to the community starting to work together from, you know, schools and other community organizations. I'm very excited. We're part of a movement called 300 Strong, where we're hoping to continuously be able to work with 300 young people as well as a lot of community organizations coming together. And that's something that we didn't used to do, but I'm excited about now Milwaukee working together and correcting this city and having Milwaukee be the beautiful, great city that it should be.
And well, Vic, let's end with you. What are your hopes for the future? What do you hope to accomplish and see happen in your community?
I hope to make an improvement on all this violence and negativity, and I hope that all these kids will learn the message that you don't have to follow people who are doing wrong just because you see a lot of them in your neighborhood. You can make your own path.
Well, Vic, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Victor, thank you.
Thank you.
That was Victor Barnett Sr., founder and executive director of the group Running Rebels. It's a youth agency in Milwaukee. Also talking to his son, 12-year-old Victor Barnett Jr. He raps under the name Lil Vic, and we've been talking about the community-building messages he's been trying to share in his music. You can find out more, by the way. We've got a link to Running Rebels and the work of Lil Vic. You can find that over on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. When Paul Ryan grew a beard late in 2015, people had a surprising number of things to say. The National Review said, grow the economy, not facial hair. And GQ called it the eye-rolling, inducing style move equivalent to your father showing up to dinner on a skateboard.
One person who probably wasn't surprised by all this attention to a beard was Christopher Oldstone Moore. He's an expert in the field of beards through the ages, and he says beards have a lot to say about what we think about grooming, culture, identity, and masculinity.
Christopher Oldstone Moore is a senior lecturer in history at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio, and the author of the book of Beards and Men, The Revealing History of Facial Hair. Christopher, thanks for being with us.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
So why have people been so obsessed with beards and mustaches and facial hair in general over the years?
Well, I think they either know consciously or perhaps unconsciously in some way that beard is kind of body language. It's a way we communicate and our identity.
Now, part of the story here has always been that the beard is somehow associated with the levels of masculinity and, in a certain sense, authenticity, too. How do you think beards are read today? Are they seen as a symbol of masculinity?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a symbol of masculinity, but more than that even, it's a symbol of what kind of masculinity. I mean, it's clearly a masculine thing, but what kind of masculinity do men want to make for themselves? And that's what they work out partly with their clothes, partly with their lifestyle, partly with their facial hair.
Okay, well, to take a couple of beards that have been popping up in pop culture, we've got the Ben Affleck, what it's been called, I think it was the shame beard or something like that, and Paul Ryan's beard. Let's start with Paul Ryan. He's from Wisconsin. What do you think about the reaction that beard got?
Well, it's especially expected that people are going to have a lot to say because he's a political figure, a prominent political figure. And politics, as you know, is a lot of symbolism. People are reading all the messages that politicians are trying to send, and so people are going to ask, what message is Paul Ryan trying to send? And I think he is sending a message. I think he's sending a message that he's his own man. He's an independent operator. He's going to run the house as he sees fit, and he's kind of a tough guy, and don't mess with him.
And yet it's polarizing, right? Not everybody read it that way. Some people absolutely hated it. Why was that?
Well, I think they may hate it for partly the same reason, that, you know, he's declaring his independence, and that means that he's maybe not going to play ball, as it were, politically speaking. I think so it can be the same message, and it can be read different ways, depending on your perspective.
Okay, so looking now at Ben Affleck, who had that well-publicized breakup with Jennifer Garner, I think it was over the summer, and he grew a beard, and people called it a shame beard because, you know, he was sort of slinking around with this beard, and that brings in another element that you write about, that people who have beards, guys who have beards, are maybe trying to hide something.
Oh, I don't read it that way. I think that what's going on is often that men will grow a beard or shave their beard, quite honestly, in a critical transition in their life just to signal a major change in their own situation. A lot of people will grow or shave their beards after a divorce or a loss of a job or some other major shift in their life, or when their beard turns gray and they start feeling old and then they shave it off. So that I think that falls into that category. And it didn't last, right? He's clean shaven again. Yeah, he's clean shaven again, and it was a transitional thing.
But that is a thing. People have reacted poorly to beards on grounds that, you know, they don't really show the whole face and that you can hide something under a beard.
I think that's true, and I think that I detect that, especially from women. I've done a few little impromptu surveys with students here at my university, and I'm fascinated that women will say things like, I'd like to know what he really looks like, you know, things like that. And I think, well, you know, what do you mean by really looks like? So men might like to say, men might like to ask themselves, what do I really look like with a beard, you know, like natural? And women are like, what do you really look like without a beard, you know? And so it's interesting. There's a little bit of a gender difference there.
Right now we're talking with Christopher Oldstone Moore, senior lecturer in history at Wright State University in Ohio, and he's the author of the book of Beards and Men, The Revealing History of Facial Hair. And going back to that idea of masculinity and beards, there's some interesting history that you get at Hippocrates, and people of his time thought that beards contained vital heat. What's that idea about?
Well, of course, the ancient Greeks, they had a theory of masculinity, and all the ancient Greek philosophers and scientists thought in their researches that they were finding evidence of what made men different and what made men superior in their mind. And the way they explained it was men are stronger, smarter, and hairier, and they wanted to connect the three, and they connected the three in terms of what they called vital heat or semen, actually, was another term that they used, because they saw semen as sort of the liquefied essence of that vital heat, which had the power to, create life, and was therefore the essence of life force itself. And so men had more of that, and that created bigger muscles and more hair, and that was their explanation.
And you've got the ancient Greeks, you're talking about them, but didn't they depict, you know, Greek heroes like Achilles as being clean-shaven?
Yeah, that's a bit of a contradiction, and that's where you see a shift, and that's what I pay attention to in the book. So the Greeks are all into, you know, manliness and hair, like you read Homer, where all the warriors have long hair. But when you get to the classical period, and that means that we're talking about the 400s B.C., in that period, the artists of ancient Greece decided to change the look of gods and heroes. And they decided to present these people in art as young and clean-shaven and nude as well. And the idea seems to be to try to create an image of immortality. And immortal people in their minds were people who were eternally young, right at the point where they're growing a beard but haven't grown it fully in. And when you think about it, that's kind of when you're not old, you know. You're mature but not old, and that was their image. And then Alexander the Great copied that idea in himself by shaving, and he was the first Greek really to do that and get away with it. And then people said, hey, this is a great look. You know, we're going to look, you know, godlike. We're going to shave.
And didn't he have his entire army shave their beards at one point? Or at least there's a story
right.
Like that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did. When he conquered, in the final battle, when he conquered the Persian Empire and took over most of the known world at the time, he ordered his troops to shave. And I suggest that the reason he did that is he wanted his men to feel like heroes, to look like him. To look like the artist's rendering of heroes that they saw in paintings and vases and sculptures.
And it kind of worked?
Oh, yeah. And it's amazing. Alexander is amazing, of course. But one of the things that's amazing about him is that his troops were able to defeat forces 10 times their strength. And part of that is discipline and motivation and leadership. But this is part of that psychological psychological power that Alexander's forces had. They believed in themselves. I think they did believe that they were godlike, if not gods, you know.
Well, looking at other famous depictions, you also track how Jesus was depicted. Because these days, you pretty much never see him. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of Jesus without a beard, but apparently he was early on, if you go back far enough.
Yeah, for the first three centuries or so, four centuries of Christian history, Jesus was, when he was portrayed, he was usually portrayed as a clean-shaven, youthful person. For the exact same reasons that I just described. I mean, he was, you know, that was the image in the classical times of what a god should look like, youthful. And so that's what Jesus appeared to be for almost every depiction. It changed about the time that the Roman Empire collapsed and the culture shifted and people no longer were drawing on classical images for their idea of Jesus. By the way, of course, we had no one has ever had any idea what Jesus actually looked like. There's no description. So these are symbolic images. And so when we shift to a bearded image, it's because we want to say something theological about Jesus, and that is that he's both man and God. And And the way to depict his manhood or his humanity was to give him a moderate-sized beard.
We're talking right now about the history of facial hair with Christopher Oldstone Moore, and he's the author of the book of Beards and Men.
And we want to know what you think. What do you think beards today say about masculinity? Do you have a beard? Are you pro or con on beards? And a particular beard in the news, Wisconsin's own Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, his new beard, hot or not? Do you like it? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
It's winter. It is officially peak beard season, and we're talking right now about the history of facial hair with Christopher Oldstone Moore. He's the author of the book of Beards and Men.
And we want to know what you think. Do you have a strong opinion on beards, on facial hair? Do you like it or not? Do you have it or not? Have you gone back and forth over your lifetime, either in your wearing of facial hair or your opinion on it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go right now to Saad in Janesville. Hi there.
Hi. I didn't have thoughts, but I had a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a med school interview coming up, and I was wondering what the history of beards and doctors is, or beards and medical people, because I'm not sure whether I should shave for the interview or whether I shouldn't, and what that says.
That's a great question. Well, thank you so much for that, Saad. I don't know, do you have any insight, Christopher, about, let's say someone wants a job to get into medical school, wants to be perceived as a future well-respected doctor? What should they do as regards a beard?
Well, that's a really good question, and I'll tell you a little bit about the history. In the 19th century, doctors were strong advocates of beards. They grew them even more readily than other people did. They were considered to be healthy and, you know, associated with that. In the 20th century, there was a complete reversal where hair, with the germ theory developed at the end of the 19th century, people became focused on the idea that beards were dirty places where bacteria and so forth would harbor and cause disease. So I think there's still, in our time, a little bit of an anti-hair bias as something that's a little bit dirty and hard to keep clean. So although I think doctors are also, you know, want to show their maturity and wisdom. So it's a kind of a tough balance. You want to show maturity and wisdom, or do you want to show that you are, you're a well-organized and clean person? So I don't know where to go on that. You'll have to judge that one as you see it.
But the corporate look for men has been pretty solidly clean-shaven, right?
Yes, and it still is. And that's because it's associated with orderliness, with discipline, self-discipline, willing to be sociable and cooperative.
So do you think there is crossover there for, you know, a med school exam, that you want to appear like that kind of person?
Well, and that's the thing about doctors. Doctors are, you know, they need to be cooperative and sociable and work in a team and that kind of thing. On the other hand, you see with on TV, you see the doctors are also strong individuals. They have a personal authority, kind of a genius, if you will, and we like that too. And so we sometimes like the doctors with a little bit of facial hair to indicate that they have this kind of unique personality. And maybe this unique insight and intelligence like, we see on TV. But I think there's still going to be a preference to clean-shaven.
All right. Good luck to you, Saad. Appreciate that call. And we're going to go next to Jeff in Rib Mountain. Jeff, hi.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Well, it's an interesting subject. I have had facial hair since puberty. Now it's in the 60s. The interesting comment from my father was when I went to grow my first beard was, you'll never eat at my table, so I said, or with your feet under my table, so I said, well, I'll have to eat standing up. He came to accept it, and I had a mustache right out of high school, which was in the late 60s, and never shaved it. I never have, and it's been in various forms. It was a Fu Manchu with the old mutton chops, then it was a full beard, back to a mustache, back to a full beard, and eventually evolved into a goatee, which I sport today.
So you've been very committed to facial hair over the years. You've never been without it since you were a teenager, it sounds like. So why? What is it about it that you like so much?
I don't have any idea. Initially, I think it was the fact that it was a maturity thing. I happen to be genetically blessed with a relatively even and well-groomed, smooth beard. It's full. Now it's all gray or white, and just the goatee aspect of it. I did change it back into a mustache at one point, which I was promptly told by my wife to grow back.
All right, some influence there. Well, Jeff, thanks for that. Is that something you hear a lot, Christopher, that guys who have beards are pretty loath to give them up?
Yeah. Sometimes they'll give them up when they turn gray because they don't like that transition. And beards are the first hair on your head to turn gray, so that's your first harbinger of age. So if you have a problem with that, you might end up shaving it off. But I'm going to hazard a guess on this caller that one of the reasons he kept his facial hair is because not only did it become part of his identity, but it also fit his identity. That is to say, he was a fairly independent person, person that didn't have to conform to other people's expectations, like an employer, for example. So he's been fortunate in that way, and probably is happy to show that.
So you think there is something to all this, that it's not just facial hair, that even today, it might be more of an identity thing than anything else?
Well, and that's because, in part, our identity is enforced upon us. Like, for example, like the doctor caller or the doctor-to-be, I mean, he has to ask this question, what should I do? Because what impression do I need to make on others, and what expectations do others hold of me? And in his profession, and I suggest at the end, I think I would lean towards shaving. In his profession, he needs to meet certain expectations, and he's not, in a sense, his own man entirely. He's got to understand how he comes across.
It is peak beard season here in Wisconsin, now that we're into the Wisconsin winter, and we're talking about beards and the history of facial hair with Christopher Oldstone Moore. He's the author of Beards and Men. And we go back to our callers. Now we've got Eric with us in Endeavor. Eric, hi.
Hey there. Hey, this isn't the point of my call, but I live in a big Amish community, and beards are also used to show that they're married or not married if they don't have a beard. But my call is, I can grow facial hair really fast and easy, and easy. And I do it ironically, though. I'll tell my wife, hey, I'm growing mutton chops and a mustache. And 3 weeks later, I have a full mutton chops and a mustache. And just fully entertaining me. I better shave my head and grow a full beard. My wife's like, ugh.
So the entertainment value is strong, along with irony. Do you think, is this what the hipster thing is, Christopher, the ironic beard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a kind of ability to put on a new identity, and isn't it fun to be able to do that? It's like trying on a new style of clothes. Yeah.
Why do you think it's become associated with hipsters?
Well, I think it's related to some things we've said earlier, and that is that these guys are saying a couple of things, and one of the things they're saying is that we don't have to conform to expectations. We are defining ourselves. And one of the good ways that you can define yourself is by counteracting the prevailing expectation. You know, the prevailing expectation is to be smooth-shaven, and if not smooth-shaven, then neatly trimmed. And hipster beards are sort of not either of those. They're a little wilder, right? And that suggests something that that the wearers are a little bit wilder than that.
Do you think that...
And they're urban. I would say also they're urban men, and they want to show a tougher side if, you know, they live in the cities. They don't live in the Wisconsin forest, so they got to show somehow that they are a little tough.
Do you think that as a society, we're ever going to get over beards? I mean, you've heard in this show, they elicit strong reactions. People get really attached to them. Some people don't like them. There have been all these stories about beards, and we're still talking about it. You know, we haven't hit, I guess, peak beard yet. So are we ever going to move on?
Well, there's two things I'd say. One is that, no, I mean, it'll always be with us. It's part of our humanity. And when you think about it, it's an important feature of the face, and the face is the most important feature of the body, the most communicative part of the body. And so it's always going to be a part of our human, you know, nature. The other thing is that as far as the future is concerned, we're trembling on the edge of a possible new bearded era. And Paul Ryan is an example. If Paul Ryan shaves it off, then maybe we're backing off. But if Paul Ryan gets good vibes from his beard and it works for him, maybe he'll stick with it beyond the hunting season, which I think is a cover story. Allows him an escape hatch in case it doesn't work out.
And we're going to leave it there. Christopher, thank you so much for joining us.
All right.
That was Christopher Oldstone Moore, senior lecturer in history at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. He's the author of the book of Beards and Men. Good news for science and bad news for kids trying to memorize all the elements. The periodic table starts the new year a little bit longer with the addition of four new elements.
The group, the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, filled in four spaces toward the bottom of the table with some new elements. Now, at the opposite end of the list from hydrogen and helium, now there's some big new atoms. You won't run into any of these elements, by the way, anytime soon. They've only been produced in a lab, and they last just a few seconds at a time.
And what's more, they don't even have names yet. Those are still in the works, but they could, I don't know, they could honor famous scientists or research institutions, things like that. And Rob, you're into this. You were a periodic table nerd. I never knew that.
I was once. I remember in elementary school, I was trying to memorize the periodic table. I'm not very good at memorizing things or patience, so I only got like 40-some into it. I don't remember if it was an assignment or, like, you know, all the cool kids were doing it, you know, and peer pressure set in, but they need names.
Yeah. The Veronica?
Ricurdium?
Ricurdium?
Ferretium? No, okay, these are bad names. Yeah. We're not scientists. And I wonder, like, oh, what'd you do at work today? Oh, nothing. I just created, you know, an entirely new state of, you know, matter. That's all. No big deal. That'd be pretty cool to see you done that.
Kind of makes our jobs look a little less interesting, huh?
No, they're pretty interesting still. And they had to work for years on this. True. So I'm cool with Central Timium here on the Ideas Network. Stick around. There's more to come on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium.